Welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
And I'm your co-host, Brandon.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
That line hasn't changed in 2 years!
I haven't done this in, like, 2 months.
It has not been... Okay, yeah, it's been 2 months. I give it to you.
Our show may not be suitable for young children.
But neither is our D&D table.
No shit.
D&D games. We want to thank you guys for joining us today. You guys all having a good time at ArcadaCon?
Yeah!
Oh, come on, Tate. I heard the one isolated no.
Yeah. No.
I'm really excited. We had a real blast. I got to run a game earlier with an awesome crew and Tater, so it was pretty awesome. I was running Madhouse of Tasha's Kiss, which is one of the products that we give away. Everyone that is here at this show will be getting a free copy of every single one of our products. You guys will get a free copy of. You can see some of the promotional content that we've put out here. With that being said, we want to thank everyone for joining us today here at Crit Academy. Well, we're not at Crit Academy, so we're at ArcadaCon, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter.
Yeah, that's right. Your roles are like weapons without any custom modifications.
Today we're actually talking about Gesh's Guide to Making Things. Have you guys ever tried to modify and create your own weapons and armor and equipment in your D&D games? This is actually a DM's Guild product, best-selling Electrum product that gives you kind of some instructions and samples on how to do it and do it really, really well, because those rules don't really exist in the current iteration of D&D.
So you haven't read it.
Well, I skimmed it, okay? That's all that matters. I don't read the stuff in advance. Who would do such a thing? And then we have our, we close out with our Unearthed Tips and Tricks. That's where we bring you new and reusable material for you to bring with you on your next adventure. That includes a player tip, a DM tip, a character concept, an encounter idea, a monster variant, and a magic item. I mean, we just throw it all at you every single week because that's how we roll.
Yeah, and we're pretty sure that...
Don't lean on your cheek, man. Come on, man. How long you been doing this?
We're pretty sure 90% of our listeners only listen to our show for that part of this.
Yeah,
it's true.
I did a poll once. That's really the only part they care about, I think. The meat and potatoes of the podcast. Normally, we start off with In the Realm, where we talk a little bit about what's going on in our lives. We're going to do something special for this event. We mentioned earlier the DM's Guild. We write a lot. So we printed off a copy of one of our top-selling products called Challenge Accepted. Anybody ever play 4E? Not a good game by some standards. I love it. But they had this thing, a unique feature called
skill challenges,
and it's the one thing that they nailed and didn't make it into 5e. So we decided to fill that in. So we wrote this nice fancy little booklet with all these little different skill challenges. They're basically gives role play more structure, right, for the DM, so you can just toss them into your games. So we wanted to decide, we want to give this away to one lucky
participant.
So the goal was to, we'll see if we can take any volunteers that are interested in doing a challenge. Basically, the rules of the challenge are, we're calling it critical thinking. We're going to have one of you come up, you're going to have 2 minutes to answer 5 D&D related questions. Now, in case of a tie, whoever gets it done quicker wins, and we'll walk home with this product. Now, I was going to have...
Dennis.
No, not Dennis. Ian. You'll face off against Ian. So if you can beat him, you will walk away with a physical copy. Or do we got just one volunteer?
I'll try.
All right, come on up. Get the hell out of here.
I will.
The new guy.
The new guy.
The new guy.
Yeah.
FNG.
So you're going to come over here and sit in Ian's spot. Ian, shut the door on your way out and go down the hall.
What?
Would you please? Are you really solving your Rubik's Cube right now?
Yep.
And he did.
Come on, man.
2 minutes.
Have a seat. Well, he'll come get you. Shut the door and get the hell out.
I'll go wait down there.
Go. So who do we have with us today?
My name is Ricky.
Ricky?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. This is my second ArcadaCon, one of my favorite conventions. Really happy to be here.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you. Considering how busy it is here, we're really excited for everyone that decided to come. What brought you to our panel today?
This is the panel that is playing right now. I went downstairs and said, hey, is there a panel going on? I want to learn some stuff about RPGs, and you guys were broadcasting.
You came to the right place, because we pretend to know a lot. That being said,
I know the feeling. I also pretend to know a lot, which is why I'm sitting right here.
If Ian's a real good guy, he'll be out there gathering more people.
Yeah, I should give him a job while he was gone. So how much do you know about D&D 5e?
Ooh, well, I'd like to think I know a lot, but...
Okay,
we'll
I can see that.
We will
so,
see.
So here's the rules. We're going to give you 2 minutes to answer all these questions. Only you can pass. I will not read the next question if you can't get it until you say pass.
All right.
We will go back to the ones you miss, okay?
Okay.
So that being said, we're going to put, you got a clock timer? Call time when it's done. Ready and go. This feature gained at 7th level by a monk allows them to use their instinctive agility to dodge out of the way of certain area effects.
Evasion.
This small and curious and impulsive race might take up adventuring as a way to see the world, and as lovers of gems and other fine items, a dangerous path to wealth.
Gnomes.
I should have made these harder. The iconic monster scours dungeon passages in silent, predictable patterns, leaving perfectly clear paths in their wake. They consume living tissue while leaving bones and other materials undissolved.
Gelatinous cube.
This plane is a misty fog-bound dimension.
Ethereal plane.
Its shores... What?
Ethereal.
Oh, shit. This magic book touches on every evil in the cosmos.
The it book can of vile use... darkness.
Fucking hell.
52 seconds, my man.
Boom.
All right, we got to get Ian back in here. Honestly, I thought some of those were hard. Clearly, they weren't.
Oh, man.
It's like, I think I know a lot, but I fucking memorized the whole book. That's pretty much what just happened.
Well, wow. I do have a YouTube channel called Advanced Dungeon Mastery, so...
Oh, you're supposed to fucking lead with that. Can you believe that?
I've never known, but my brain went tender, and that's not even
that's not even D&D. All right, so if you would, we'll have you go ahead and sit over there, and we'll have you come back up in a second. Woo!
All right.
Woo! He did pretty good.
That's all I heard.
You heard us cheering, or him say something?
Brandon said something.
All right, well, here you go. You gonna write that time down? I got it.
That gauntlet has been thrown.
Now, just for clarification, he hasn't gotten these questions in advance, and to prove it, I did it this morning when everyone was... gone. I was sleeping. We're supposed to be sleeping.
Even when I was wide awake.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
And go. This feature gained at 7th level by a monk allows them to use their instinctive agility to dodge out of the way of certain area of effects.
Uncanny dodge.
This small and curious and impulsive race might take up adventuring as a way to see the world as lovers of gems and other fine items of a dangerous path to wealth. I did.
Kender.
Okay. The iconic monster scour dungeon passages in silent, predictable patterns, leaving perfectly clean paths in their wake. They consume living tissue while leaving bones and other materials undissolved. This plane of misty, fog-bound dimension, it shores and overlaps the material plane and the inner planes.
Ooh. Astral Sea.
Time.
This... For the first... Oh, let's suck a dick. So the first question was evasion, not uncanny dodge. Your answer was evasion, and Ricky said evasion. So 1-0. The next question was a small and curious impulsive race was gnome. What did you say? Gander?
Gander?
Gnome was the answer, and Ricky got it. The iconic monster that scours the dungeons, the gelatinous cube. You both got that right. Ding, ding. This plane of misty fog is the ethereal plane that overlaps the material plane. And the final question that we didn't get to, the magical book that touches every evil in the cosmos. It can be used to unearth terrible secrets no mortal should know.
Necronomicon?
Nope. Book of Vile Darkness, which in fact Ricky got. You know, I thought it was going to be hard, but I just think you were smart as fuck. So congratulations to Ricky.
Just the one, bud, would you?
I hope you like that.
Stunning art.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you like it. So...
Wait, did you do this cover?
Huh?
Yeah. No, he got that from Dropbox or something.
Okay. What is Our show may not be suitable. I want to see.
It's her game.
It's Toy Blast sent me a message and said, your toys are waiting for you. Come and play now.
Oh.
All right.
All right.
I remember Mom yelling at me because I was playing with her lightsaber. It was weird.
Right.
All right. So that'll do it for our critical thinking. Congratulations, Ricky. We hope you like it. No. Please, before you leave, make sure to leave us your YouTube channel and everything. I'd like to check that out. And if you decide you want to give that a shout out, if you like it, feel free. moving on to our next topic, we do our Let's Talk About Blank, where we answer submitted questions by listeners from Crit Nation. This question comes from Tim Miller. Player... Character control. What's your opinion on how much free reign a player has over all the character choices, actions, versus what the DM has control over? Now, this is a weird question. I think we've all experienced the DM that's a little too invasive, but there's also players who don't allow the DM to do some of the responsibilities of the DM. Before I give my long-winded response, what are your guys' thoughts?
You're talking about, like, when I go to cast, like, a cold spell and you say, okay, you wind your hand up and you let it go, and I want to punch you in the face every time you do it?
That may be part of it, yes. Actually, Tater was just bitching about that earlier.
Could you hit the Frozen reference?
Yes. Yeah, sometimes you just got to let it go, man. But all seriousness, do you think that there's a point at the DM at which point the DM takes too much control over another person's character?
Generally speaking, I do believe the character should be decided by the player, because it's their character, that's why they're there. Now, that said, there are some points within the rules that is acceptable, but you are going to go more in depth with that one.
Yeah, I will, because I've had personal experience with that. Does any of you guys had any experience where you felt like your DM took way too much power away from you?
Game ended, what, 2 hours ago?
Oh, motherfucker, dude. Come on. Cutting me no slack, huh?
Never.
That was the biggest cling on the game.
Yeah. I apologize. I didn't let you swing your sword yourself.
Right. But as far as the actions the characters have taken, it should be up to the first playing character. The results are up to the DM.
I would agree with that.
That's fair.
What about our YouTuber here? What do you think, Ricky?
I think that, well, yeah, like you said, that the player can do whatever they want, and the DM has to react to it. But if the DM is too punitive a lot of the times in what responding to the player's actions, that is an equal way to sort of stifle their creativity and their agency.
Absolutely.
I remember one time when I was playing at a convention, right, and there was a Thieves Guild boss who was giving my character a bunch of lip, and we were coming at heads. I said, okay, why don't I slap her, right? And I walk away. The GM responded by having all the guild members just come and Jon Snow me and stab me. I spent $100 to play in this game. So that's a way that the DM can let the players do whatever they want, but still really controlling of their actions.
I agree with that. So I'm somewhere in, I've got really strong feelings about this. So I got a bunch, but Ian was nice enough to remind me of a very particular example that I had. I was playing a sorcerer, and I was playing a lawful good sorcerer. Now, I don't generally worry about alignment. You know exactly where I'm going, don't you? That game was so long ago, and I still don't let it go.
This is a great story.
And so I'm like, all right, I'm lawful good. So we get ambushed by orcs. I'm like, sleep, bitches. And poof, they fall asleep. I was like, all right, let's cut off their heads. They're like, wait, what? I'm like, well, they just tried to kill us.
Okay.
It's not my fault, huh?
I was okay with it.
Yeah, I was like, it's not my fault. They just tried to mug us. And the DM would not let us do that because I'm lawful good. And I said, I'm lawful good, not lawful let them try to kill me and not get vengeance, okay? So there was a lot of fight back and forth on this, but finally we're like, whatever, we're going to tie him up. And I said, you know what's going to happen? We're going to be in the middle of a fight, and these fuckers are going to show up and kill us. Hour and a half later, we're in one of the hardest battles I've ever been into. I'm cowering on the floor from Tasha's hideous laugh, and two fucking javelins come out of nowhere, and I look over, and it's the bastards that I put to sleep that he made me tie up. That was an example of where I think the DM should have just let me do what I want and make a alignment shift, or which I still don't think was against. Do you guys think that would be against lawful good, getting jumped and then just knocking them out and killing them? You think that's against
just lawful? Killing them probably would be against.
Yeah, but I'm not a paladin. My powers don't come from being good. I'll do that. But I was really pissed about that, because if he would have just left him there, I'd been fine. But no, fucking spear Justin to death. All right, whatever. So I do think that there's a point that the DM can take too much control. But I also think there's sometimes I've had players get upset. I have one particular player I can think of where it was not Tater. Tater gives me problems in a million ways, but this wasn't one of them.
She gets mine quick.
Yeah, she does get it quick. I had a player who got really mad that when the fear mechanic specifically, there's dragons and certain monsters that just they elicit fear. And when you make a con save or when you make a save against that and you fail, it's because you're fucking afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid. And so when I tried to tell a player, you know, you're cowering on the inside, you don't know what it is, you start sweating and you know you gotta get away from them. That's not how my character would act. I'm like, that's literally how fucking fear works, okay? So that would be an example of
that's why it's called Frightful Presence.
Right. That's an example where, I'm sorry, what do you got out there?
We're playing a game, and there's a bad touch ghost.
I'm sorry, a what?
A bad touch ghost.
It's not familiar, Justin.
What the?
I couldn't open the door, it'll be fine.
We're in a haunted house, and we checked. Had to figure out why the ghosts were angry.
Oh, that's a different bad touch I was thinking of. I'm like, what are you talking about?
That was really strong, and he couldn't even pick up his axe no more. So he got bad touch.
Oh, he couldn't handle his shaft?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. The same one where he ended up marrying the ghost.
Yeah, he put the ring on his finger, and Tom's like, I got an axe, so I'll take the ring off.
That's funny. I like to play wizards and barbarians, and I had a wizard. They never get past like level 4 for me because I was walking down into a cave and everyone's like, hey, we should probably use mage hand to open that door. It's a door. What's gonna happen? I open it, a spectral claw came through and like shot me, and they have that drain life thing, took me right to zero and killed me. I should roll up another character because this has like been 15 minutes. And now my mage is always open with mage hand, so.
We warned you.
I do think that there is, players have agency, and I think as a player, that's important, but I also think you need to understand that there are going to be times that DMs take control. Now, if you're the DM, don't pull control away from your player unless you absolutely have to and you have no other choice, because part of the whole storytelling is it's their story.
Now, that is not to say there isn't consequences for actions.
Yeah, definitely. Like getting speared by leaving the enemy alive that tried to kill you because you were forced to by the DM. I'm talking to you, fucker. Anyways, so... Overall, I think we've pretty much beat this to death, but I do think there is a responsibility of both player and DM to make sure you don't get too much involved in the other person's business, because we're all here to play a game, and nobody likes that controlling people.
It takes the
bond out of it. Yeah, it does. It's like marriage. I love you, honey. I'm kidding. That was a joke.
She listens, trust me.
I know. She always seems to listen to that when the weird shit that I say comes out.
All the time?
She doesn't do that well.
Oh, God. I think that'll do it for our Let's Talk About Blank segment. We are going to go ahead and move on to our main topic, which is Gesh's Guide to Making Things. Now, we do a lot of different discussion topics, but one of the things we like to do is we like to go and search out some of the best created content on DM's Guild. There are some amazing writers, and I'd even go as far as say some of them are better than a lot of the WotC content that comes out.
It's
and it's pretty amazing. That being said, a lot of people, such as yourselves, aren't aware that DM's Guild exists, so we make it our mission to do it and hope maybe someday they'll sponsor us. But in the meantime, we buy these copies off here, get them sent to us, and we like to check them out. And then we always share enough that we can get our add our own little opinions on everything, because that's really what we do. We just talk a lot of shit. But also hopefully inspire you guys with some of these ideas. Now, the creator of this is Anne Gregerson. We've actually had her on the show a couple times. Absolutely astounding writer. She just showed up on the scene in the last year and has just done rocketed right to the top of awesome. So kudos to you. You, Anne, I know you're listening to this.
All the way into your Scandinavian.
Yeah.
Scandinavian.
Gesh's Guide to Making Things is a crafting and modification system designed to complement the 5e rule system. Kobold inventor Gesh Fizzlebang is an enigmatic character of some renown, known for his rather explosive ways of improving the equipment of his fellow adventurers. Though his backpack may cause some raised eyebrows as to the validity of his craft, Gesh's has thoroughly tested all of his inventions for imperfections before releasing them to the world, as is evident by the burns he has received on his fingers that he's lost. So this is a really interesting guide. We've all kind of went through it already. Just off the cuff, before we get into the specifics, what's your overall take on this thing?
I skimmed through it, and I think there's a lot of good information in here, and they give some alternate crafting times, which I think is great, because I think some of the, quite frankly, the crafting times for some items in 5th edition
is ridiculous.
Like, basically 1 year to craft a suit of plate mail. It does not take that long to craft a suit of plate mail.
How long did it take to make a club?
I don't know. I don't remember
not
that
you.
Shit.
I'm not asking you.
Oh.
Well, it's free in the book, so technically no time at all.
Yeah, there you go. See,
I was talking about this book. Wasn't it like 4 hours?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. So the first thing they touch on in kind of Ian...
Yeah,
Gotta have a lot of drinks to make that glow.
Before it's interesting. In the making equipment, what's really cool is they actually tie it to specific tools. The little equipment that you, your artisan tools that you get in the player's handbook, which once again doesn't really get the attention that it should in just the regular player's handbook, we think, right?
And not even in the DM's,
yeah,
for that matter.
Yeah.
They give you very vague guidelines at best.
Yeah. So they tie some of the skills, like making weapons that are metal requires smith tools. Well, that's pretty common, but leather worker's tools helps you make leather armor. I mean, so they really give, Anne really gives you a lot of details in that in the cost. And we're not going to get too into like the details of those, but she does break it down into four categories. You have basic equipment, which is, she gives an estimate, that's something you would do around first level. You have intermediate, advanced, and masterwork. So what's interesting is you can start to build and add on to these and take away. So you can kind of customize a piece of equipment by modifying the... What are you doing?
It's Taylor. Always be suspicious.
Yeah. Anyways, he's distracting. So that gives us a wide range of unique abilities to work towards. For those people who love like the complexity of like Pathfinder and 3.5, this really gives you something to branch off of and look forward to include in your build. Motherfucker. God damn it, Tate. to include in your game as you're planning out your character.
And actually, quite a few of these were welcome throwbacks. So
for sure. Definitely. And what's, by the way, the art in this is beautiful. I wish I had a projector. She did a really great job on the layout, but...
She always does.
So what's interesting, though, is we all... In the DMG, it talks about what crafting takes so many days during long rest, right? Well, don't you think there should be a mechanic to speed that up? How awesome would that be?
It'd be great.
You think so?
In our campaign, the blacksmith is making you silvered weapons from silver bars. How long did they say that would take? Like 2 months or something?
I don't think so. 2 weeks maybe? I don't remember. But it's ridiculous.
Yep. You don't remember?
I write shit down because I don't remember. You're the... I have a notebook.
You're one of my players. You should know. I'm going to kill you next session.
You've already made me beat myself. What else can you do to me? She actually gives you steps to crafting, and one I think is awesome is you can choose to overwork your character and make con saves to induce exhaustion. So you can actually shorten the length of a craft time just by putting in a little more work. The problem is if you adventure any time in between there, you're not going to be at quite a bit of a disadvantage, but it could be worth it. As you mentioned, the crafting for armor says it takes a year. Well, I want it to take half a year, so I'm going to have to work twice as hard. So the next adventure, you might be slogging it. All right, which one's the bad guy? The ugly one. They're all the ugly one. I don't know what you're talking about. And you'd be droggy, whatever, you know, or droggy, you know.
Groggy.
That's what I was going for. And what's interesting is, even with that, though, there's a built-in success and fail ratio that can lead to wasting all your time, effort, and more importantly, resources and money, which is something I think happens a lot. People get, what do I do with all this gold, right? In 5e, that's a question I think that comes up quite a bit is, I'm getting all this gold, but I don't know what to do with it. Well,
especially when you're a wizard.
Yeah. I like to run low magic games, so this really gives a way for them to funnel their money into something they want that has a payoff at the end, don't you think? What's wrong? You seem angry.
I think he's having some flashbacks.
Is Tater...
You motherfucker.
You gotta include the rest of us.
He posted in our Discord, holy crap, this show sucks in person. Afraid to heckle too much and really threw them off while they can see and hear me.
It's because I thought you were going to pull some shit.
Well, I actually posted a picture of you right then and then.
All right, so do you guys have any questions about kind of what we've talked about? Can I get some of your guys' opinions? What do you think about this? Do you ever done anything like this? Or what about you, Ricky? You do a lot of 5e stuff on your YouTube channel, right?
I do. I have a lot of opinions about making stuff in game for the game, about homebrewing. I don't have a whole lot of... I haven't put a whole lot of thought on crafting, but I do know that it's something that people really want a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They want more crafting rules, and that's something that I'm really waiting for. So to come up with a good system to deliver it.
Especially since we had that earlier editions, they stepped away from it.
Yeah.
And now Wizards has said their train of thought was to give the agency to the DM to have them make the decisions. But the thing is, a lot of DMs don't want to make those decisions.
Too much work.
Yep.
I don't want to get too much in the details of the little gritty, but what I do want to talk about is the the one of the details she touched on, we covered one of her books called Monster Loot, right?
Yep.
Where you can take components from monsters and actually get functional features out of them, like increasing a spell, your spell's DC of a certain spell when you have like the a Gorgon body part or something like that. When you use Petrify or whatever, it gets a higher DC, you know, shit like that.
Or the Venom Sex from a Manticore.
Yeah, yeah, right. And so she went through the entire monster manual and did that. Well, she did something similar with this for items to detail crafting. So she calls out very specific items you have to go and get if you want to do this, which really drives... You're going to, like, triple that, so it looks like there's more... She really goes out of her way to say, hey, you can craft this, but it's not just sitting in your hovel and hammering away. She has a lot of these items that you have to drive the player to want to do that, which I think is great when the players want to go out and do something. The challenge is getting them together.
Combine them like Voltron.
We want to touch on some of the features and stuff. I mentioned the monster talk. She talks about different types of hides and bones and scales and how they function together with the different modifications you can make. Now we want to get to the good stuff. What are some of these modifications you're talking about, and what do we got to do? Once again, we don't want to get into the details of like the crafting, but we are going to talk about the different features. And we picked out a few that we really, really liked. Well, I did.
You did.
But as we go through this, we'll pick a few and you guys can touch on the ones you think are really interesting. And once again, we'll start in basic armor mods and basic weapon mods, and then we'll move through the different levels so you can kind of see how they scale as the players get higher. So one that I thought was really interesting was the burnish modification for armor. So this says it's only a one-day crafting, requires it's not magical. The prerequisites is just a set of armor or a metal shield. And it says, the metal on this shield is or suit of armor has been polished until it becomes shiny as a mirror. The first time a creature attacks you and you are in bright light, the creature must make a wisdom saving throw or be blinded until the beginning of its next turn. You also have disadvantage on stealth checks that rely on sight while you are carrying this. Now, what do you guys think about this?
It definitely has some extra game mechanics. I some pluses and minuses.
I wasn't listening. I was trying to open PDF.
Do you guys have any thoughts?
My rogue can carry it.
Your what?
My rogue.
Your rogue?
I got 18, and then my shoes give me a plus 10 to it.
Nice.
I got 28.
Are you proficient in shields?
Oh.
Mm.
And then you regular couldn't.
What about you, Ricky?
I like it. I think it's an interesting way. That adds a nice little wrinkle to the game in a logical way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how I feel about the wisdom saving throw. I think disadvantage is probably the faster way to resolve that. But both the idea of you polish your armor, and so now people get blinded when they try to attack you, but you're also hard to sneak. I think that makes a lot of sense. It's really
Yeah, and that's one of the basic mods, and I think that she did really well, and that's one of those things that I don't really think about. It's not magical, it's just something that mechanically you can do. What do you think, Tate?
I kind of agree a little bit as far as the shining of the shield and that, but that would become very useful for, like, a Medusa.
Yeah, I like that.
I would actually think maybe of shining the inside, not the outside.
So you can see behind you better. Oh.
I'm curious as to why they chose wisdom as being what you would have
to do. Perception to see, right? That in 5th edition, they use wisdom to determine perception modifiers. So that would be the save. Did you have one picked out that you wanted to talk about?
Yep. Actually, the one I picked out was a advanced weapon mod.
Okay, well, let's talk about the advanced weapon mod. What is it?
The one I selected was Bloodied.
Ooh.
And this one has a crafting time of 30 days. This is a magical mod. The price is 2,500 gold pieces.
That's a lot.
Yep. And it can be used on any weapon. But short version, anytime you reduce a creature to 0 HP, you regain 2d6 hit points.
How often can you use that? Every time?
Every time.
Oh, that's nice. So that's advanced, right? That's like third tier stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
So it'd be useful for an endurance match, just doing like a dungeon run, so.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely a way to beef up a character.
And less work for the cleric.
the best cleric's the one that never has to heal you.
Regen of 12 HP.
Yeah,
every
but it's
time you kill
third
a monster.
Tier, though.
2d6. 2d6. Up to 12.
Yeah, I said up to 12.
Yep.
I don't think that's bad. You think that's a little powerful for level 15 tier?
Oh, no.
Level 10 to 15 tier.
No. Not for 10 to 15.
was like, my level 2 character has this. It's not going to work. It's like, it's not for level 2. Oh.
You got to be louder.
Project.
There's no microphones for them to hear us.
What?
Yeah, I can't put you on mute like I usually do.
Oh, God damn it, Tater.
I'm third shift. I haven't slept in a while.
Pussy.
Yeah, I woke up at midnight. He woke up at 3 a.m. and we were both wide awake. So, good stuff.
Have you guys got any thoughts on that?
Such a sphincter.
And I also do want to point out that not only did she give you ways to modify armor or weapons...
Yeah, we should stay back on topic.
But she puts in extra ideas for bombs and grenades.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get to that. I want to talk about this... I want to talk about, so at the intermediate level, your skills get a little bit more into the magical level up from basic. So now you're starting to get things that are not just some sort of polishing your shield to blind somebody sort of level. So here we have hardened modification. So actually, I should pick a magical one. We'll do this defiant one. So this defiant modification is a crafting time of 3 days and is in fact magical, and the prerequisite in this case is a shield. A magical enchantment has imbued this shield with additional power. When you are hit with a critical hit, you can use your reaction on your turn to turn that hit into a normal attack. You cannot use this property again until you finish a short or long rest. So this has definitely got Scream's tank all over it, because nobody wants to take a critical hit, and they're so infrequent that you probably have a reaction available to avoid it. The problem is when you're fighting that shit that's got two or three multi attacks and come in like a wrecking ball. But I think this is pretty cool. What do you think, Ian?
It's useful. My Forge Domain clerk would love that.
Oh, I bet he would. Oh, God. So because this is magical, you think it should have some magical effect that really reflects what it's doing. Do you have any idea how you would flavor this magically? I like
Did
ketchup.
You say with ketchup?
Yeah,
ketchup.
That's the best flavor for anything.
Mustard.
Oh, God.
Made out of molasses.
Molasses.
Oh, my God. Are you the only person on your show?
Yeah.
So you don't have to deal with this shit, do you?
No, this is the reason why. You're like a life lesson here.
I'm going to keep it on my own.
For them.
2 years of this shit. So I kind of envision this. If I wanted it to be magical, I would find if I was the player creating this, because you really get to craft it. If you're like a cleric, say you're a defender of Helm, I can see like a magical crest, like a transparent symbol of the gauntlet of Helm, maybe blocking the blow as it comes in and absorbing some of it, and then shattering as it smashes into your shield or something like that. Oh. That to me sounds awesome and a great flavor for something of this mechanic. Did you have another one you want to talk about? We'll go through a couple more before we move on.
Oh, I got the explosives.
Explosives?
Explosives.
I like explosives.
I feel like some of our audience members do too.
Now, I know the DMG. I want to talk more about the weapons before we get on to explosives, because that's a whole segment.
Okay, one.
I can't win around here.
Nope.
Everyone hates me. You suck. Next time, I'm going to leave you with a broken mic. That's the trick. It's his mic's not even plugged in. I just leave it unplugged. And...
But I'm still allowed to be picked by yours.
Okay, so here we have advanced weapon mods. We're in the third tier. She has a lot of really cool things. You mentioned the bloodied one already, I think.
Yep.
What I think is cool is she's got this one called Elemental Edge, which I think is pretty dope.
It is.
So it takes a 15-day crafting time. Yes, it's magical. And it's 1,000 gold pieces. Arcane runes in colors of blue, red, orange, and green shimmer across the weapon. Choose one damage type from cold, fire, lightning, and acid. The weapon deals an additional 1d4 damage of the chosen type.
Ding, 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 ding. Ah, right rune. Ding, ding, ding.
Anybody ever read the Aragon series? Anybody? No? God, I'm alone. The process of forging a weapon like this was extensive and very exhausting, and the amount of energy that was drained from the caster is just something awesome. If you're going to go through and have your player craft this stuff, I think it would really be important to include the process as clear as you can. Either, and it doesn't have to be something that happens at the table. You can do an email or a Facebook group. We have a Facebook group where I send stuff, where you could give a very thorough detailing of how this crafting ended just before this weapon was imbued by fire or whatever element. It basically gives it a little extra oomph, but it's at the advanced level. What do you think?
You need a lot of that.
Yep.
Oomph. Oomph. Oh, God, I fucking hate you all. Yet you terrorize me every Sunday. I appreciate it.
You're a patron.
Hey, this is the bonus. It's a Saturday.
This is worse because at least on the projector I can ignore you.
Why do you think I signed up?
Thanks, Tater. I think this is a pretty nice weapon. I don't think it's overly balanced or imbalanced or anything for at the tier that you're at. The only thing that I've noticed is there hasn't been any real, like, bonus to, like, chance to hit or anything like that on any of these weapons. Anybody notice that?
No, there's a few.
There's a few, but there's not really that many. It's not like, okay, the best solution is just to give them bonuses. Because in 5e, that's not really the focus of the magic items, the damages. I think this is really cool. What kind of flavor would you add to this process to make this weapon flavor-wise really awesome?
Trying to think.
Hamster ring fast enough?
No, it's not.
Do you at least get the show notes open?
Yeah, the fucking show notes are open. I'm tired.
Of your shit!
The flavor of when it happens, okay, yes, and he's sitting there hammering and he retching the sigil. He hammers it again, sticks it in the flame, he pulls it out, and as he brings it up, lightning flashes from the hammer and he strikes it, and now there's these little lightning bolts etched into the edge of the blade that every once in a while, and it's just like, ha ha ha, taste that. Tasered. Medieval taster.
That's the guy I hired. Thank you. That was really good. I like that. I envisioned Thor forging a hammer a sword right then. I think these are pretty cool. And they're not, like I said, they're not all damaged. Some of them are more support oriented. We got here. Oh, she's got such a huge list. It's crazy. I want to talk about one that's more appears to be like a utility one. I think it's this one here. It's called Switching.
Ah.
This really tickled my dice when I read it. I'm going to be honest. I'm a big fan of very complex. This is a masterwork skill. This is actually, you craft onto a bow or a crossbow. When you fire this weapon, you can speak the command word. The ammunition will twitch and bend in the air. If it hits a creature, the creature takes damage as normal and must make a wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, you and the creature switch places. If the space where either of you or the creature is occupied by another creature or object, it fails. That sounds awesome.
There's a lot of fun stuff that can be done with that.
Yeah, I mean,
you're shooting at this creature, right? But you throw a crit fail, so the switch happens too soon, and you get hit by your own arrow.
Oh, no, what is that shit?
I was picturing somebody flying 100 feet up in the air, sniping somebody. Switch places, now they fall down to the ground.
That's the first thing I was thinking of. If you're like a tiefling variant or an era Kokora, how do you say it? Era Kokora? Stupid bird, people. And do that and just switch places with people and just watch them fall to their death. I also think it would be hilarious if you're inside like a castle or you're approaching a castle or a dungeon, you got the little soldiers up there on the top and, okay, you guys ready? Draw your bows. Shoot as soon as he's here. Boom.
I just thought about another hilarious one. I ready to fire my bow when the enemy wants to cast fireball at me.
Oh! All right, you got that wizard that says, "All right, I'm gonna cast fireball. All right, target me." But man, he's like, "I'm gonna ready as soon as that arrow hits him. I'm gonna cast it." Okay. He succeeded. Shit. He doesn't transport. I think this is pretty cool, and this is a power that I think is very a great one at that masterwork level, because that's something that can become game-breaking depending on the cleverness of the player, I think. What do you guys think? You guys have any interesting thoughts on something like this?
the timing has to be there to make it really worthwhile.
You think so?
Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of the products are good for part of your backstory
mm-hmm.
of the sword and or whatever the item might be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like you mentioned, the bonuses and actions and stuff, the timing has to be perfect.
Yeah.
You have to be careful giving this stuff like this to your players.
Oh, these yeah.
Players are just, they're super smart. Actually, he did something yesterday. I was running a game from them, and he did something I didn't really expect, so I had to kind of wing it.
You did a good job.
They're on a ship, and they're being chased by a giant water spider, a gargantuan spider. It's 400 feet in diameter, 90 feet tall. It's a colossus. And if they can manage to get 500 feet away from it, they escape, but it keeps closing that gap. It's like, okay, so what are you guys going to do? You start to lose sailors. They're falling off the boat. He's like, do we have any meat on board? I'm like, yes, we do. Why? And the druid did a check and says, yes, the spider seems like it's hungry. It wants food.
That's why it's chasing us?
That's why it's chasing them, because the boat's this big and it's this big. So it's like, nom, nom. And he's like, yes, we're gonna drop the anchor because it's not long enough to get to the bottom. And we're going to put the meat on the anchor, and we're going to fish for something to feed it.
I went trawling.
I went, oh, my God, really? And I started thinking, I was like, okay. Okay.
Roll yeah, a d20.
It's nice saying, yeah, I think that's what it was. I rolled a d20 to determine what it was going to be. And the boat stopped. Something, they hooked something, the boat went, so much that the water started coming over onto the boat. They're like, okay, we got something. Raise the capstan. It's a little thing that you spin to bring the anchor back up. And all these sailors and them, they're on it, and it doesn't move. And the first mate's like, it's big. It's real big. It's not going to come up. And it was the spider's turn, and it lunges. And just before it gets to the boat, these tentacles come up and grab it because they hooked a kraken, and it pulled it under.
They only broke half of it, so it was the crack of dawn.
Oh, God.
I'm like a hater.
It was really awesome. I had a lot of fun. And there's like almost, there's got to be almost 100 different modifications that she goes into on here, which I just think is phenomenal. There are some, there is like tables at the end that show what the prerequisites for anything are, and you can look for it at like from that perspective. You can say, okay, well, I'm looking for a set of armor. So here's all the ones that are for armor, and you can easily sort through it and see the prices all at once instead of having to scroll individual items, which I thought was a really nice touch because honestly, if I've got one, issue with my player handbook, it's that the index is effing garbage.
But then there's the Shadowrun handbook.
Yeah, and then this something like this makes it quickly easy to find what you're looking for. So, and I know Ian is just itching to talk about the crafting bombs and grenades section. Uh-huh. I can feel his excitement radiating from him. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how she does the making of the explosives? Do any of you use explosives in your games? Oh, your hand goes right up.
Yeah.
Why not, Ricky?
It's just not my style. Like, you have one of the very low magic, sort of Dark Ages, sword and sorcerer style game.
That's fair.
Yeah, I can see that.
Fire Emblem is just not my particular cup of tea.
Okay, I can see that.
That's
I can
I
see that.
Coffee.
What kind of bombs and firearms do you have in your game?
Actually, my sister was running the campaign, and our friend Frankie. Because, okay, what's in this? Frog. He's like, it's just the claw, that's all he has. So he chops off the parts and he goes up to the lady's bedroom that they're fighting. Ties a string to it, a vial of poison. He's got a kobold named Ginger and she knows how to make explosives. So he rigged it when she picked it up. It explodes little bits of metal and it explodes. And she also gets acid. On her too.
Nice.
That's fantastic.
He does, yes.
Not anymore.
That's cool.
He had just enough intelligence to pick up some things.
Yeah. I was in a game my DM wouldn't let me play with explosives. So I says, well, do you care if I reflavor anything? He's like, oh yeah, you can reflavor all you want as long as you don't change the mechanics. I went through and completely reflavored my wizard. My fireball. Or firebolt was a grenade. My fireball was a big grenade. I had alarm, which was basically a proximity mine that just didn't blow up. It just went instead. I reflavored the whole thing. It's like, I told you no explosives. No, you said no mechanic changes. It's a wizard. Suck you. So all the time I spent like prepping was him just like making all of his bombs and stuff, and it was so much fun. He had a big bandolier that he would just pull these grenades, quote unquote, fireball off of. It was great.
And so many people get butthurt about reflavors too. It's like, that's not mechanically possible. He made a symbiote, a Venom.
Yeah,
it was an exact replica of the Player's Handbook of Barbarian
and Fighter Multiclass.
Yeah.
That's all you did.
Barbarian Fighter Multiclass. That's it. He didn't add anything else from any other book, but he just changed the way it looked. And people were like, you can't use that. That's not how that works.
That's way overpowered, man.
It's from the fucking book.
It was glorious. I had fun. It was the battle. It was the rage, basically, was the Venom. When you rage, they would bust out and go over top, you know. And then all the Battlemaster features were like the tendrils that would lash out. And it was I had so much fun.
You did.
Actually, I was on the One Shot Onslaught podcast that they just did for Halloween, and I played that character. It was a hell of a reveal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They're like, holy shit, Teddy's scarier than the bad guy.
Yeah.
All right, back on track.
Yep.
Thanks, Justin. Nope. Or Brandon, that was a good story. All right, so I know you want to talk about bombs. So why don't you tell us about the creation process, kind of in light detail?
Well, obviously, there's a little bit of an alchemy component involved. Mm-hmm. There's different skill levels involved for each one, and there's even some, mishaps that could happen where you're
making explosions. I love mishaps. That's one of my favorite things about anybody. Oh, God. This poor kid. Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, the Izzet Guild. Oh my god. They get all the cool gadgets, but the shit blows up randomly. It's hilarious. I love it. Their whole little segment causes like explosions, so all the other people are like, give them all the room that they need. It's pretty great.
Well, I know one bomb, I know for a fact you do not want me to get access to is the Banish Bomb, for example.
Oh, mother. You're not allowed to use Banish no more, by the way. I had them. They were
he's
on Dragon.
So many
they
games
were,
doing that.
They were on Dragon back, and he's like, "I'm gonna banish the dragon." The motherfucking guy fell to his death. I'm like, "Shit!"
The Dragon Rider. That's long after that.
Dragon back. Is that like Broback?
Yes, Tater. It's exactly the same. All right.
That's
so
that's great. Within the fire giant, how he banished him, and 1 minute later he came back. Someone else had banished. He's like, "You mother!" disappeared again.
I hate you. Yeah, you're not allowed to play stuff that can ban. Anyway, so what are some of the mishaps that happen? Obviously, probably damage, I would imagine.
Yeah, pretty sure most of these are some sort of like kaboom.
Yeah, it looks like you have to make a check, and it starts at 50% chance of misfire or mishap, which is pretty damn dangerous.
And then also, I want to point out there's some gas grenades, healing grenades.
Ah, we made one of those.
A healing grenade?
Healing grenade.
We made one of those, didn't we? Like a potion that you
yeah.
It's a potion you throw and then it explodes.
I'm still disappointed at the name.
The what?
So I'm still disappointed at the name.
What?
You call it the Holy Hand Grenade.
Why?
The Holy Hand Grenade in any instance that's ever been used is not a healing grenade.
No.
Well, it is in my fucking world. Yeah, I did it. I went there. How about you make all the magic items now? Earth-shattering kaboom!
There's options.
Yeah, the banishing bomb.
Where's the kaboom?
There it is.
Earth-shattering kaboom.
So they got quite the collection of different bombs and grenades and things that can really do. Banish, basically, guess what that does? It's a banish spell, right?
1d4 plus 3 rounds.
Oh, that's not bad. What's interesting, though, is it isn't banish a concentration spell? So this actually makes that much superior to that, but it's only one-time use, so that's interesting.
And it might be worth a couple hundred gold.
Yeah, so you can buy a few of them, yeah.
That could add up very fast.
Now, this is an advanced tier item. Keep that in mind as well. So it's not something that they're going to get early on. But at that point, your characters are so powerful anyway. What level do you get? Wish is 9th level. You get that at what, like 18 or 19 or 20?
It's up there.
20, I don't remember. You know, Ricky? What level do you get Wish?
You get Wish at 17th level.
Okay, I knew it wasn't 20, but I couldn't remember the level. So this is approaching those levels of power. So at this point, it's not as powerful. What really tickles my dice is this concussion grenade. It says the creature standing within 15 feet of the grenade. You have a really limited range on these things. They got like, what, 20 to 60 feet, so they're not like very long. But they make a con save on a fail save. It basically does Thunder Wave. is what it looks like.
Boom!
Which I think is fantastic. Is there anything that's really unique that stands out that just doesn't go boom? That would be a no.
Should be a ball.
Fucking ram rocket? Brandon, why don't you tell us about the ram rocket? Oh, that's right. You can't pull nothing up.
Open the PDF. All I can do is comment. So read it.
You'd rather demonstrate it on you.
So in the ram rocket, it says, when this bomb goes off, two smaller rockets fly out of it. Each rocket targets a random creature within 30 feet of where the bomb landed.
Aim carefully.
Which it then flies towards at a rapid speed and rams into it. The target creature must succeed a dexterity saving throw, or on a fail, they take damage. And what's cool is some of these have, like, advanced and masterwork tiers, so you can have them made at multiple tiers, which I think is cool.
Is there a polymorph grenade in there?
I'm looking for one. I was looking for something similar. I don't see that, though.
Got him.
What's really cool, she does have a voice box bomb, which I think is cool. Upon crafting this bomb, you can speak a message or a phrase into it and it be stored magically within the shell. The message can be up to 6 seconds long. When the bomb is activated, the message is played. Dude, you throw this one and it says, duck, by the time another grenade comes in right behind it.
Is someone unplugging stuff over there?
No, my...
Him.
My computer finally finished updating after an hour and a half.
All right, I think that's pretty good. I mean, what we've talked about is a very small part of this 40-page document of all these intricate rules and stuff. What's cool is it's very detailed, but it's not overly complex. Yes, which I think is where Anne really nailed it, because that's one thing I think Wizards is concerned about by introducing all these things that we want, but kind of go against the streamlined feel of what they're going for with 5e. And I think she hits a really good balance there.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
there it is.
If you go too much into detail sometimes,
mm-hmm.
it'll scare away new players.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
That's where, you know, the Wizards don't want. Because
right.
They want all that new players.
I agree. Overall, what are your guys' thoughts about this in the crowd? You guys got anything that is something that may or may not appeal to you?
There's some interesting things there.
Oh, for sure. All right. What about you, Ricky?
He's very creative. There's a lot of just little things that you share right there.
Mm-hmm.
Just all sorts of great scenarios are rushing through my mind. Like, oh my gosh, I can say I'm ready to say this message self-destructs. And it does.
That's hilarious, and I love it. I think this is a great, like I said, Anne has made some pretty amazing things, and we cover a lot of people that do, you know, like character archetypes and all this stuff, but coming into something that the DM can use to enhance the player's experience, that's something that really tickles my dice all the time, and I really enjoy it.
Yep, and some of her other products, like she has, like we mentioned before, she did Monster Loot, and she did not just for the Monster Manual, but also for Bolos and Mornkinds.
Yeah, I mean, she's got entire books. Anyways, so I think she does a really good job. If you ever go to DM's Guild, some of you guys are going to walk away with some stuff today, so you'll be able to, at the very least, you can go listen to our discussions with her and about her products. I recommend it because once again, in a year, she's come to the top. So.
I assure you, the podcast is better than the live.
Highlight reel.
Way to talk us up, Dick.
Uh oh.
I got a complaint.
What's that?
You suck.
Oh.
Yes.
Hey, guys, why don't you go over there and give him a dance for that $5? <It's> All right, I think that'll do it for our main topic today.
Is that why it smells like a condom?
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
When you do go to DM's Guild, you notice that everything there is actually affordable. They don't, like, overcharge for anything.
Oh, yeah. Some stuff's free. Pay what you want. $1, $1.50.
I mean, our gun mage, our sorcerer's archetype is free.
Well, they're going to get all of
and
our
it's,
content.
Well, you're
going to
get
so.
It for free.
Everyone gets that for free, but you guys
and
will get all the
it's
content.
Free, and it's a pay what you want. And that's still producing income because people think it's good enough. So
good enough. Thanks for that. You want to tell us about a character concept?
Yes, I'll tell you about the character concept. It comes to us by Strahd von Z.
I can't imagine what that stands for. On Twitter.
On Twitter.
I forgot about this.
The Wand Wizard. He has a large leather tool case. Think artist's brushes and such.
Of course,
lined with wands. 10 to 50 of them. What the fuck? Each is inscribed with runes and magical words.
Oh!
This is my light wand. This is my command wand. This is my fireball wand.
A.K.A. his boomstick.
No spell book, just wands. His preparation and memorization for his spells each day is him painstakingly picking each wand he needs for the day. All of these can be on a bandolier that wraps around his chest.
That sounds awesome. That's a great reflavoring because really there shouldn't be a mechanic change there, I wouldn't think. But yeah, can you imagine that? This guy, instead of having a quiver full of arrows, maybe it's full of wands or a bandolier going around where he says, I got a wand for that. I got two, you know. I think that's interesting. What I think would be really cool.
If it was the wand warlocks, like.
The wand warlock's got one wand.
I got Eldritch Bolt.
Eldritch Blast.
No, but if he's really like low level, you know, just started off, instead of having bandolier, he does have a quiver, but it's from like an old can.
An old can.
And string that's being held on. And as he levels up, it can get better and better. And he can have it where it has, you know, it's still a quiver, but it has slots in the front so you can, like, put your apexes in that around there on the outside, and you got a bunch on the inside.
So, if I was to run this, I think it would be awesome to use colored pencils. So I would pick up a colored pencil every time I cast a spell. Like Fireball, oh, it's going to be the red one. So I wouldn't even have to say what I do. I just say, I cast a spell. And eventually everyone would get used to the ones that I use all the time. You would know which one's my Fireball one. You would know which one's my Firebolt one. You would know that the blue one is Counterspell, right?
Now I see him in a teacher shop getting all like the fuzzy tops and you get the pencils and all that.
I think this is an interesting idea because the spell make is a cool idea, but can you imagine the character painstakingly creating a wand with the spell words and stuff wrapped around it and glyphs and stuff? And honestly, once again, I just want to carry some colored pencils. I cast a spell. What do you guys?
That's a spell.
Ribbon on you, and you'd be sitting there twirling it. No, fireball.
They're gonna be like, "I hate your fucking." One, somebody get mad at me, just break my. Yeah, I can't cast fireball no more. You blew me up with an a-hole.
Or you panic and you grab like five of them and you just go.
Roll all.
So you have to roll to figure out which one shot off.
Oh my god, I think that's hilarious. Oh no. What do you guys think about this in the audience? Is this something you think would be interesting to see, or?
Yeah,
I think it's hilarious. Yeah, I agree.
And a lot of these come from our listeners, and they have such amazing ideas.
Oh, what if he takes the entertainer background and he's a drummer and all his wands are drumsticks? Oh, and he's like twisting them between his fingers and shit, and boom, bitch, sliding it in, pulling it out.
When he plays the bass drum in a marching band.
He's beating his drum. He's like, yeah, you're going to go boom. That's awesome. I think this is a fun character concept. I agree with the audience. I think this would be a lot of fun.
Next up, we have our monster variant for the podcast.
I like this.
The Blood Drinker.
Somebody plays World of Warcraft too much lately.
You.
I didn't say it.
But you implied it.
I did.
Now, the origin from the Monster Manual is the half-ogre.
So, basically what that means is you basically just use that stat block with this minor change. Now, keep in mind, this can push the CR up a little bit, so you do have to keep this variation in mind because it does make this thing damn near indestructible if the players can't figure it out.
If.
So I would encourage you to make sure they get intelligence checks or something to identify this pattern. Otherwise, they're going to get demolished if they don't figure out the trick.
And in this case, the new add-on is the Blood Drinking Aura. The Blood Drinker regains 5 hit points at the start of its turn for every creature within 20 feet of it. Now, if it takes cold damage, it doesn't function at the start of its next turn. The Blood Drinker only dies if it starts with 0 HP and does not heal back up from this.
Okay, so to start, I think that the half ogre only has 30 hit points, so that's a huge percentage of hit points to get back now. Now keep in mind, he only gets it back when there's people within a certain range, making it potentially a very dangerous fight for anybody that just charges in and doesn't think about it.
Every barbarian played.
Yes, I think this one is specifically meant to be challenging because sometimes running in and stabbing something isn't necessarily the solution. That being said, it's not so challenging that it can't be dealt with by a party with a few tricks in their satchels, right? All characters should have some sort of ranged attack or some way to deal with this. What do you guys think about this?
Nothing a banished spell can't take
care
of.
Oh, motherfucker. I told you can't use that spell no more.
Nothing a banished spell can't take care of.
Hey, so,
if I get stuck in a room that's 15 feet by 15 feet with this thing,
oh, you're fucked.
Then we're all just.
But that's the point. It's meant to be less about outright just killing the monster and more about how can we figure out how to deal with this thing that can die but not as easy. Now, if anybody recognizes the ability, it's basically a low level version of the troll's regeneration, except for there's a condition attached to it, so it can be dealt with. And for me, I like to run monsters that players encounter once, then as they get leveled, they encounter it more, and it might be, instead of it being the boss, it's now some random guards or minions. First, it helps with their growth. They feel like they've gotten stronger, and they already know how to kind of deal with it. But this is definitely something that, it lets the ranged characters shine, first of all, which is something that needs to happen sometimes, because you do get into those where all the high DPS melee guys, the rogue is first thing that comes to mind, really can outshine some of the other casters, and I think this really lends itself to exploiting that letting them shine. What do y'all think? Do you guys, is this something you would be willing to try?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I ran half ogre just earlier today. It's really kind of sad monster. It's like
yes.
30 hit points, 12 AC, and like multi-attack, right? It's very boring.
Yes.
This changes variant where the company with a like, really strong flavor text,
mm-hmm.
so that it helped me as a DM get this information to the players, then I'd be all about it. But
mm-hmm.
I think it needs a little lifting, you know?
Okay.
So it has some sort of like aura around it.
Oh yeah, I would
see the blood like sucking out of the players. Then
I'd
go for it.
I would agree with that. And that's kind of what I envision here, but that's also based on some of the other auras mechanically. Mm-hmm. So that's really the reason. But I do think you're right. There would be need some sort of flavor to that.
Some sort of
which brings me to the next point is how would you flavor this? But you already tears don't figure it out. Your wizard's smart as fuck. You better give him a check to figure that shit out on his own. And those are kind of the thing. And you can do little subtle things. If you want it to be like ability directly from like the trolls, maybe you give it some features that a troll might have or something. But I do think you're right. And you really need to cue for that and allow intelligence checks for them to figure it out. Because once they figure it out, this thing's going to go down. He's got really no attack that's going to hurt him at range. All they got to do is have the barbarian hug him. He'll regenerate 5, just do more damage than that in a turn. So that being said, it is pretty... it's an interesting mechanic. I ran it for the kids, and they figured out really quick. They just ran away and just shot it as they ran until it died. So I'm like, okay, that works. All right. I think that'll do it for our monster variant. Our encounter of the podcast comes from patron Charles Kuntz, the imprisoned spirit. There is a legend of a spirit impaled on a tree with a runed iron rod. This has caused the spirit to be held in place, coming alive at every dusk and vanishing at the first rays of light. He is found near the crossroads near an old iron cage they kept thieves in as punishment. He has the knowledge of an old dungeon door the party needs access to. He will give the information to the party if they remove the rod and free his spirit. Ooh, I like this. Oh, God damn it, dude. Once released, he has 3 things that will happen depending on how the party interact with his spirit. If rude or threatening, he will attack the party using the Banshee stat block, and once killed, submits to the party, giving the information before disappearing. If neutral or businesslike towards him, he freely gives the information and then leaves to get revenge against the family that staked him to the tree. And if friendly and they learn his story, they learn of his need for revenge and have a quest to cleanse his spirit, allowing him into the afterlife after giving the information to the party and showing them a secret way into the dungeon that has an extra item or two of loot. So...
Hey, if you happen to kick on these glaives in this order...
I like any time that the option isn't just to kill something. I'm going to be honest. We see a lot of the murder hobo players, and you can assume they'll probably just charge in and try to cut him up because he's different, and adventurers are racist bastards, so, and they kill anything that's not them. This is interesting because it gives us three different choices, right? The first one is they attack it and they end up in a fight and they kind of get what they want. What I would personally do is have him tell them a lie that takes him to where there's a trap or something that might get a couple of them for what they did to him, right? Because anytime you're a dick to somebody, I feel like karma should come around. So I, if I was to run that and they attacked one, yes, I would give the information.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, I know. I'd give them the information, but it would lead them to some sort of trap or unexpected encounter, I think, is how I would like that. Then you have the neutral where he freely gives the information. They're pretty kind of business-like about it. Hey, we're looking for this. Hey, help me and get me free, and that'd be great. I like this, but I think that we could do better on it.
Help me help you.
Yes. If they're business-like towards him, I'm the type of person that likes to have an interesting spirit. So maybe there's more to it. Maybe he's trying to send you out freely to give this information and then leaves to get revenge himself. I think that once he gives the information, he stalks and follows the PCs because he can't get the door open because he doesn't have a physical body to retrieve a special item. And then try to steal it right out from beneath the adventurer's nose to do his revenge, right? Because he's still going to go and do his revenge, but he's going to be a little... Maybe he was a thief in his previous life or whatever.
Well, maybe
but.
Where the door is, it has a curse on it that whenever he gets to a certain area, he basically suffers pain in that.
Ooh.
And so he needs somebody else
to go get it.
The door open.
And then take it from them when they're coming out.
And going back to how we mentioned that he has some information about a dungeon door... Usually what I was thinking about
the last part?
The old game was more of a puzzle, but you used to, as kids, you used to get these little squares with one square missing, you had to slide them around to get them in order. That would be the puzzle. You, whoever buys that product, if they can solve that, now they have the code to get the door open.
Ooh, and then I still like the idea of him just stealing it from him. He needs a special item. But
he's going to steal whatever is behind the door.
Ah.
But to get the party to open the door, he sells them the answer key.
Ooh.
To the puzzle that's on that door.
I like that. That's good. That's good.
That's good.
What about the last one, Brandon? He's friendly and offers them the sob story of revenge, and they help him. How would you make that? How would you enhance that? This is where you talk.
Yeah. Shut the fuck up.
A moral dilemma would probably be a
Ooh, I like that.
He's a big fan of those.
Hell yeah. I love it anytime you can make the players cry.
Until we played with Steve and he didn't give a shit.
Oh, like, no.
There's a crying little girl over here. I'm going to eat her. Say what?
Well, he did that to me today. He's like, you know, three kids are dead. By the way, I did choose three. And it was like, so how does that make you feel? I said, I'm in the middle of battle. I really don't care.
I hate you.
I'm in the moral quandary that his revenge is unjustified.
Oh, I like that. It's something petty. You have a good example?
I don't know. That
Tater.
He was tied stake to the tree because he did something treacherous, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he thought, oh, this was punishment was too far. You know, no, you tried to kill the Lord.
Oh,
we like him.
That's awesome, and that could create an interesting conversation between whoever they're hunting, if they choose to talk, because most players are murder hobos and don't actually do that. But that could be interesting. I like that. That's hot.
You know, he just tied, you know, between a tree and that, but meanwhile, it was an initiation to get into the guild that he eventually failed out of.
Ooh. There's some good ideas. I love this. Do you have anything on this, Ian?
I think we've heard quite a few good ones from the audience.
Yes, awesome. And I'm hoping the mic picks them up good enough. I'll have to modify a little bit. I should have, faced it
next
better.
Next time, turn it on.
Oh, God damn it, dude.
I taste the ball. Turn it off and on again.
Well, when we do our show live on Twitch, we have this screen that pops up. It's animated. And says, oh, it's Crit Academy. And it shows our logo. He doesn't like us talking during that, so he'll mute our mics. There was one time for like 45 minutes straight that we were muted, and he didn't look up at the screen to read what the people were saying. And Tate's going, hey, we can't fucking hear you.
We can see him, but we couldn't hear him.
And none of us knew. It was the very first time we figured
it
out.
Oh, it was one of the first times we were streaming, I think.
Yeah. And
I should probably delete that off
from that
Twitch
point forward, whenever he's on OBS and he pushes go live, it's like, turn the mics on.
Fucker. Anyways, I think that's a great encounter, Charles. Thank you so much for your submission. Brandon, would you like to tell us about our magic item?
All right, I'll try the Deckard thing, but...
No, don't try. Succeed.
No, I do not. There is no try.
Yeah, listen to her.
Yo. Okay. Today's magic item comes from Villains and Lairs 4. It is called The Suffering.
Ooh, The Suffering.
The Suffering.
It is a wondrous item. It is rare and requires attunement by a cleric or a paladin. An ancient leather-bound tome. The interior pages are filled with illuminated script and celestial. This magical book functions as a club. What the fuck?
That's my condition. Bean saw you in the magazine. Oh my god.
Or it's a scroll.
Oh, it's rolling up with a scroll, little metal ends. Oh my god.
In addition, you gain a +1 bonus to attack and damage rolls made with this weapon. While wielding it, you can use a bonus action to cast one of the following spells once a day. Searing Smite or Thunderous Smite. In addition, while attuned to the book, you can read, write, and understand Celestial.
So Jeff Stevens is one of my main men. He is so awesome. We've had him. He's one of the top guys. Actually, I'm starting to realize that a lot of the people we have on the show are some of the top creators on the guild.
Yeah, and we're still not.
I'm working on it. Hey, our products are best sellers. That's progress.
Yeah, copper.
Sure, we haven't hit fucking platinum, but...
I mean,
but we're consistent.
It is cool that our stuff is selling that way, and we're getting copper bestseller and silver bestseller. But our free one, the Gun Mage, isn't that a copper bestseller?
It's a silver bestseller.
It's a silver bestseller. Don't you only get that if people pay for it?
Yeah, and it's a giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're derailing it. But anyways, so this actually came out of Villains and Lairs by Jeff Stevens. This guy is amazing. I had the privilege of actually writing one of the villains and one of the lairs for this book. That's not the item I came up with, but this is something I stumbled across when I got the item in my mailbox. And I've talked before how I had a barbarian that just used a reflavored maul, but it was a rock. And would just beat people to death with rock. So this thing jumped out at me as awesome. I was like, oh, I can play a paladin that beats people to death with his Bible. Follow hell, bitch! And just start beating their face in with it. Hell will save you. I got way too excited when I read this.
Yes, you did.
What do you guys think? Exercising people. Devil be gone.
Can I hear an amen?
Can I get an amen? Amen!
Blessed be, go with God.
Devil be gone, bitch. The power of Christ compels you, bitch! Power of hell, I'm sorry.
But who is your Lord?
It's like one of those ones on a pastor's pulpit. It's like this thick, and he's got to use two hands with it.
Well, no. I like the fact that when you're looking at it, it looks like a very thick book. But like you said, it can get turned into a club, and you walk up, and you hit the right spot, you can roll
it up.
And make it into like that magazine you swap back.
It's like, that's a nice book, and the leather bound looks really worn. How old is it?
I don't know, about...
3 days?
A year, maybe? A year, and it looks that bad? What do you do with it? I hit people with it.
Let me demonstrate the impact of Palor's word.
Oh my god, that's great. I think this magic item is awesome. Jeff's team did a fantastic job developing this, and the adventure that this actually goes with is pretty awesome too, so definitely check that out. That'll do it for our magic item. I love our Dungeon Master tip today. If you have noticed, well, I'll just go through this really quick. So, as a DM, it's important to present information to the players in the best way possible. Do y'all agree? Because when we forget to pass on that information, we get a what, where, who, when, is this here, is that there, I don't know. What did you say? So it's important to find a good way to share that information. While I personally prefer Theater of the Mind instead of all the little minis and stuff.
People like those.
Yeah, well, go play at somebody else's fucking table.
I got a game at 6 full minis, 15th level.
Okay.
There you go.
I have found that visual indicators are a great way to stimulate player imagination and memory. So using this, banquet card holders, these little things here, which you can buy like 20 of them for like $4. They hold the shit like this perfectly. And you can sit it right on the table and put the if you've got the cards, or you can print off your own and put them on stock card stock or whatever you want. They're great visual representations, and if you've got the monster cards, you've got the stats right there. No flipping through your book, I think, is great. You can also put other things in there, like pictures, like scene setters, which I think is fantastic. You can put a little picture of like a big giant icy mountain. That's where you guys are. So this is a constant reminder. I recently, for the kids, I put little Magic the Gathering land cards in there, and I held it out so they could see what the fiery terrain kind of looked like, and I didn't have to keep asking me, where are we at? Because kids do that a lot because they're not really paying attention. Only when it's their turn, and when there's like six of them, it's like,
are we there yet?
Yes. It's like, is it my turn yet? Is it my turn yet? Is it my turn yet?
Ugh.
No, no, no. It's your turn. I'm not ready. That's what it's like to run for those kids. I love those kids. Don't get me wrong.
Awesome. I like the Azen thing. I'm going to use it for you guys.
Good. You should.
For our campaign, because you, all of you keep seeming to forget that there's laws in Waterdeep and you keep breaking them.
Oh, yeah. I keep breaking them. Apparently,
you can't keep breaking them.
Hey, now.
Yeah, his character almost got
Brick
it.
Brick didn't know that it's illegal to eat people. Okay?
Or even worse, like, he's saying, hey, let's go have a good time, mud wrestle.
Good time.
Like,
good time.
You like good time.
And they're like, we can't mud wrestle right now. We're in the middle of the street. It's dry. It's just dirt.
And says, good time.
Oh, I make mud. And he unzips and lets it go. And all the guards see this. They go, and it's disturbing the peace. So, of course, I got to act that out. I was like, you're disturbing the peace. Well, his character's a freaking idiot.
Good time.
So he can't read. He can't speak right. He's like, what's wrong? There's nothing going on. It's like,
Brick, have good time. Like, you know this thing.
I don't care.
I thought it was hilarious when, because I was talking to him, he's a red half-orc, and the other half-orc shows up, and they're talking about good time, and then the commander, without skipping a beat, he's like, oh, good time, yes? I'm like, yeah, good time! Oh, and yeah. He's like, you want to go that way, there's a place for that.
And Captain Staggy, everyone's panicking because it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Oh, because they're fighting, like, they're getting ready to...
Yeah, he's a cook. It says, I offer you donuts if you let us go. And it's
that's
like
bribery.
That's bribery. That, and I'm going down this list, and they're...
There it is.
They're going to get hanged. That's what's going to happen if they don't stop. And Captain Stagg, the captain of the guard, he comes around the corner. He's like, what's going on? It's like, these guys. And he's like, put your pants up. gets them up. It's like, what are you guys doing? Like, they're trying,
we do good
they're trying
time.
To mud wrestle. And he goes, you mean good time?
He missed it without a beat. I couldn't stop laughing for like 5 minutes.
It's like, yeah, there's an arena in downtown for good time. It's mud wrestling. They're like,
because
he's a pristine soldier, and he's like, how do you know about that?
That's how you gamble. What do you guys think of this DM tip? Is this something you would use?
Yeah. I like the minis.
These things are neat.
Yeah, you can use that in addition to minis.
I like that you can make them different colors.
Yeah, painting and stuff, yeah.
I have a thing for like everything, like every NPC has their own, and the next card.
Mm-hmm. NPCs, like, it totally sees.
Yeah.
I love that. I just got a whole deck of monster cards on Kickstarter. That's...
I think this will work good for initiative too.
Yeah, and if you play any card games like Magic the Gathering, you can pick the heroes card, like the cards with the great art, and put, oh, this awesome knight card, that is the captain of the guard now. There he is. And you got a card, and players will know. If you just set it out, how are you doing today? Oh, that's Cap. We know who he is. And to me, it's an awesome, powerful tool. Like I said, it doesn't have to just be monsters. It can be environmental effects, or, hey, you're at a barn. Here's a picture of a barn to remind you, you're in a barn. It's flammable. Don't cast fireball, please.
You can get your DM notes on the other side of the card, too.
Oh, hell yeah. I got a picture of that I posted on our Twitter that shows the front and back of some of my tip cards. So, anyways.
I like what you also did with during the game today, where you had it on top of your screen,
mm-hmm.
and when you were doing the countdown.
Oh, yeah.
And it sat, the way it just sat perfectly right in the middle of the top. So, you know.
Yeah, I clipped it on my...
On each round going through.
We've talked about that on the show before. I clipped it on my...
You ever use countdown die?
Yes.
I love escalation. You want to make your
players panic. That's a great way to do it.
Yeah, in this one, they were the enemy was ripping the soul out of an innocent guy, and his chains were digging into it, and I put like a 5-round timer on it. And the longer the battle went on, the soul was getting more and more ripped out till he finally ripped it out and stuck it in a bottle. Because, you know, that's what he does. That was awesome. I do like that. That needs to be another tip.
Of course, Ben uses a Rubik's Cube instead of a countdown die.
Yeah, you did, and nobody could tell what the fuck was going on. All right. Do we got anything else on this DM tip? Good. That's the way I like it. That'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. Banquet card holders. I can't recommend those enough. You can even get the tall ones that are right down here on these tables. They're a little more expensive, but they work really great.
For flying creatures.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah, for flying creatures. That's motherfucking genius, dude.
That's why you invite me.
Yeah, right? moving on to our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by creating canned responses. Everyone loves a character that has a thing that they say, a response that starts them. One of my favorites growing is what? It's clobbering time! Who is that?
What's his face from
the stone guy. The thing from Fantastic Four.
Yeah, the Fantastic Four.
How about me smash? Hulk, right? Yeah. Those are good canned responses. What are some other good canned responses you've heard before?
Bazinga.
Spoon! What's that?
That's not what she said.
That is a good canned response. What about you, B? You got any good canned responses?
Bazinga.
Bazinga! I love Big Bang. Everyone knows that's his thing, and he does it. That's his canned response, right? Your heroes and your characters, you can bring them alive by coming up with a thing that's unique to you. Like Brick. He's a cook. Fiery red hair, sideburns that come down right here, all the way down here, but a big shave spot. And then he's a cook. He wields, what is it? It's a giant spoon and a giant butcher knife, and he fights with. And anytime he goes into battle and rages, his bent cook hat stands straight up, and he goes, let's get cooking. You know, that's his shtick. And so you know he means business when he says, let's get cooking, you know. And I think that as players, coming up with a canned response becomes your thing, and people know what to expect when you do it. Whether it means you're going into combat, whether it means you're telling a joke like Bazinga. I mean, generally, I would consider this more for a combat sort of thing, but it doesn't have to be. Like in the Naruto show, you have the stupid lazy kid. He says, "What a drag!" You know, that's his response. Somebody says, "Doesn't matter what it is." He goes, "Oh, what a drag."
I thought you were gonna say, "Believe it." And like, that's horrible God, too. But why don't you just rip my eyes out?
Do you guys ever play a character with a canned response? Yeah, what was your canned response?
I haven't eaten you yet.
That is awesome. Brick is stealing that. Oh, yes. Oh, I love it.
Brick go from high mountaintop, air sick lowlanders. But I tell you what, his competition always chops off heads so they can't come back from undead. You know, that's how you stop undead coming back. You chop off head when they dead. Do you do this thing? Oh, you need to do this thing. You are the reason why we are being plagued by undead, I think.
I thought it was funny because the entire campaign, every bad guy they've killed, he has decapitated them.
I've cooked them, though.
And said,
they
won't come back. There was one time. One time they did not cut the heads off of them. And in the newsletter the next day it said, hey, a bunch of these people.
Zentarum?
Zentarum, the underground gang members. A bunch of their dead bodies rose back to the dead. Now they're zombies.
And he's like, somewhere. I told you this thing. We did not chop off heads. They wouldn't let me do it. Oh, my God. I think the canned response is a huge thing. I also think I've seen the similar tip on Taking 20. If you've watched any of his videos, I think he talks about it a little bit, too. It's a great way to really bring custom one-liners to your character that are just your thing, your shtick.
I think the closest I ever had was when Joram kept saying, do not make me bring out my clipboard.
Oh, the Hulk has two.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
That's Bruce Banner.
It's the same motherfucking person, okay?
No, it's not.
Oh, whatever. Get out of here, Dr. Jackal. I truly believe that the Hulk is how Banner really feels, and he just gets away with bullshit telling everyone he's an idiot. He's a fucking genius. Why wouldn't he? He just pretends he's stupid and he gets away with shit.
Actually, it's multi-personality disorder.
I don't believe you.
I have one of these. One of my characters had one of those.
What is your character? Oh.
So, okay, there's that inside joke.
That's a good one. Yeah,
here's a story about how this happened.
They're like, we just want to fucking go.
The gun mage. It was the character that I had made. We were playtesting it before it had come out. And
the crystal gun, right?
Yeah, it was a crystal gun. You can flare this however you want. My specific one was he dabbled in alchemy with crystals and such. And there was an accident where like 90% of his body became crystallized, like amethyst and emeralds and stuff. I'm trying to describe the gun. What did gun stand for again?
Enhanced focus or unconventional focus.
Yeah.
Something convoluted.
Yeah. It's some convoluted bullshit to make it sound sciencey.
It's an arcane focus so that you can take like from the ethereal and it combines it together and you use that to shoot it. It's a gun.
I love that he playtested this and have no idea how it actually works, because that is not how that works. It pulls the energy inside the sorcerer out who can't access his power innately. That's why they get this special item. God, dude.
Are you sure?
I fucking designed it. Of course I'm sure.
Well, I've been playing it wrong since level one.
Still, you're not playing it wrong. You just thought I didn't understand how the mechanics and the flavor works. Okay, whatever. Continue.
Anyways.
We're doing on time pretty good.
I'm describing the gun and how it looks. It's like, oh, it's like a selenite, the crystal thing. It's shaped like a gun, and it has elvish runes on the side of it. Well, I stumbled over Elvish, and I said Elvis. And from that point forward, the entire campaign, whenever I holster it, I have to go, oh.
All the way to level 14, so it was a long time.
Pure Star Wars, every time you do this gun, I'll go, oh.
We couldn't help it. It just became an automatic response. It became a canned response by us.
The whole time. It's like when I say, okay, I go to attack. Oh, it's
just... And he does wear blue suede shoes.
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious. I love it. It's pretty cool stuff, though. But that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
Shut up. I like that, Tatey. Way to go.
Did you just call him Tatey?
I did.
He did.
Tater. Tatey.
Either.
Anyways, that'll do it for our show today. Please join us on our next rooms where we discuss taverns, inns, and tap rooms. This is a platinum bestseller on DM's Guild that comes with all kinds of details of fancy foods and dishes you can get at these special nine. I think there's 9 or 10 special inns. But what's cool is I'm pretty sure some of the food is buff food, like gives temporary bonuses and stuff, which I think is fantastic.
Any of that stuff bourbon dough by any chance?
Oh, God, I don't know. I haven't fully read it yet. I'll let you know. But it's a really interesting one. It's a big seller on the DM's Guild at the top. So we're excited to cover that. If you have any feedback on our tips and tricks or topics you'd like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email us to us at critacademy@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at Crit Academy, where I'm constantly posting some random shit. I just finally started taking all these tips and publishing them into a little index card that the DMs can print off. Be like, oh, that's a good idea. And move on. It's pretty awesome.
We hope you've enjoyed your experience here at the Crit Academy. If you did, you can help others find the show by hopefully leaving a 5-star review on iTunes or your platform of choice. Or just send us a message telling us how much you enjoy the show.
I love those.
And also, be sure to give us a like and a share.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually get a lot of those.
If you'd like to support the show, you can visit us. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. Right, Tater? Support the show. Most players get an opportunity to help playtest us our material, and they get to follow us on our private Discord, where basically there's some weird-ass shit that goes on there that's not appropriate for children. And, of course, once a month I run a game for our patrons, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of good stuff there. Or you can just purchase some of our content on DM's Guild, but you guys are all going to get it for free, so I guess you don't have to.
$1 a month, you can heckle them too.
Yeah, that's
the only reason he pays.
That's his argument, because he pays us on Patreon, and he screws with us, and he knows that we can't just be like,
fucker.
We can't stop him because he's giving us money to do it.
He's paying to belittle us.
Well,
are we your therapy? Therapy. We're like his therapy sessions. Brandon also does commissioned art, so you can find that stuff on Facebook. Make sure to subscribe to our show at CritAcademy.com. Follow us on twitch.tv/CritAcademy. And subscribe on YouTube so we can help you on your future adventures as well as be entered to win cool prizes each and every week. Make sure to check out our fellowship members. We have a lot of fellowship members. If you like podcasts, Interparty Conflict, Gabe and Jeff, they answer your questions in a much more professional manner than we do. You're right. That's not a high bar. But they do a pretty good job. I really enjoy them. And then, of course, you can check out Brute Force and Ignorance. They're the only actual play podcast on our network at the moment, but they are hilarious. Dan West just cracks me up with his stupid Kengu. It's awesome. That being said, we want to thank you all who did show up here for the ArcadaCon. Did you guys enjoy the show that just saw it for the first time? I noticed none of you left. Well, not left and came back anyway.
Yeah, it's because they...
Yeah. It's because you're right.
We need their emails.
Oh, yeah. They want stuff. Yeah.
Also
because
Ian put crazy glue on
feet. Oh, genius, my man. Well, I think that'll do it for our show. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Brandon.
And I'm your co-host, Ian. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes.